Janet was with Arizona. She's a senior health, senior public health specialist. She is a registered nurse. She's been working with the IIS for 15 years. And in the interest of disclosure, I do have to point out that Janet is receiving a salary from Scientific Technologies Corporation. So with that, I'll leave it to Janet to present.
I'm here today to talk about a project that we did with the state of Arizona. They contracted with us to help facilitate their data exchange projects for 10 different sites. And it was a true learning experience. It was a first HL7 efforts for the state of Arizona, and we learned many things that I think you'll find useful. First, I'd just like to overall address the issue of EMRs and how we are all very excited to have them as clinical applications and thinking that they are, in fact, the end all. We've been sick of billing systems and some of the data quality issues there, but I'm here to tell you they are not utopia. They are not an IAS. We would all like to think that the same kind of functionality that we have in our immunization information systems is built into that EMR, and they are not. It's still junk in, junk out. It's still as good as the user who's using it and the data that they're putting into it. And we do have a lot of vendors rushing to the market, and I inserted this little Walmart picture here because you may or may not know that one of the very popular vendors now is working through Sam's Club to make a more affordable product for providers to purchase EMR products. And so that puts a whole other little color on what is happening in the EMR world, and now that there's going to be some stimulus money coming down connected to health information exchange, you can bet I have this vision of a man sitting in a closet, you know, pumping out software to, what can we call it, what can we get it to the market, and how much can we sell it for. So I think it's going to be a very interesting time. Briefly, I just want to talk about kind of the history of EMRs and where did they really come from, where was the motivation for them, and physicians were looking for improved documentation systems, and it had to do with quality of data, it had to do with quantity of data, and legibility, and that all really was tied back to reimbursement. My former life was working as an emergency room manager, and we had contracted physicians, so way back in the early 90s, we were already talking about, gee, if you wrote better and you had better things in here, we could code better and you could probably get paid a little more money. So, you know, part of this world is about reimbursement. Certainly time savings, convenience for the physician and for the patient, continuity of care, so when another provider had to take care of your patient over a weekend, there was the ability to access a record. Decreased medical error, certainly. Pressure about practice standards and HMO models and liability issues motivated them. To use documentation at point of care, so there was no going back and writing notes later. You could do it as you were seeing the patient. It was access to other services, lab x-ray results, and e-prescribing is a popular buzzword now. And data integration, so that it was a cumulative record for patient data in one source. So in terms of IIS, they're very interested in getting the data back from IIS to put back into their EMR, so there's a single source for their information. So, like I said, you know, of course we've used practice management system billing data for years. We used it because it was the only source of data that there was. But we always questioned the data accuracy. It was transcribed usually from a super bill, and it was by a non-professional staff that really didn't know enough to question if there was an error. And it may still be used when an EMR is in place. Not all EMRs can export complete data. So we thought, you know, when the advent of EMRs, it's the preferred source of data. It usually offers all the fields we want to capture. We're looking for vaccine lot numbers, manufacturer names, expiration dates. And some of them, rarely I would say still, do have VFC status in their systems. And because the data is entered by clinicians, we just assumed that it was going to be more accurate. HL7 data transfer capabilities are there, and sometimes, not always, there's a capability for the automatic upload, so it's not the issue with staff turnover and manual uploads depending on a person to do that. And sometimes we can actually get real-time data transfer, which is great. There's the advent of the CCHIT standards for interoperability, help support what EMRs needed to do. And providers are motivated to work with the IIS, and I would say that's forced EMR vendors to look a little more closely at this. For years, we talked to them about the value of working with public health, but until the providers actually pushed it forward, they weren't terribly interested in paying much attention to us. Pay-for-performance measures for providers certainly has helped pique their interest in working with immunization information systems. And many of the EMRs have child health templates in there, so they're looking to populate that with immunization data in terms of a quality measurement. And there are EMR vendors now that are making their products IIS ready, so off the shelf as they sell it to a provider. They're looking at the major vendors and making it already ready to work with IIS. And their motivation for doing that is that they're now trying to differentiate themselves in the market. And there is a difference in EMRs. And talking to some pediatricians, there are definitely some EMRs that are more friendly for pediatricians to use. So therefore, they're interested in the IIS data. So in terms of this project, just to give you a little background about the Arizona Immunization Registry, they are a mandatory reporting state. They have over 1,400 private providers, 221 public, 89 community health centers, 55 Indian Health Service facilities, and 559 schools. They have over 300 million patients, and 95% of them are considered active patients. 36 million immunizations, and they have been doing many, many flat file transfers for many, many years. But HL7 transfer was new for them. So this particular project covered 10 providers. There was a public health entity, 4 community health centers, and 5 private providers. The 7 vendors that we worked with were NextGen, eClinicalWorks, GE Logician, Cerner's PowerChart Office, iMedica, EMDs, and EHS. Our process for making sure that we had done an end-to-end data quality review was for each provider to complete what we call an export initiation form. And it gathers the basic data about the system, what version they're using, who the contacts are for those vendors, how long has the provider been on the system, where is that legacy data, how did it get to the EMR, who is the technical representative that helps support their EMR, but who is also the clinical people that are involved in the EMR. So when we need to talk about coding issues, that we have someone else to go back that has the clinical perspective. We did an initial interview with each of the sites and the vendor. We have a product that we call the HL7 Bridge. There are a lot of EMR products that cannot export data natively through an HTTPS secure connection. And so the HL7 Bridge facilitates that, and wherever that was necessary, we installed that. We routinely review all of their coding tables. So some of them use CPT codes, some of them use CVX codes, and GE in particular uses what's something they call OBS terms. So we reviewed those for accuracy. We tested the test file for technical ability to transfer the data. We compared the data from sample charts from the EMR to the electronic file. And we monitored the files then for a while after they were live to see what happened. And so some of the things that we learned is that even though you might have the same application being used in a similar place, for instance, the 4 community health centers were all using the same vendor, the same application, the same version, but they each had individual servers where those were residing from. And they were still quite different. So never, ever consider anything as a slam dunk for similar types. Each file has to be tested uniquely, and each situation is unique. Each server, they had their own configuration settings, and the vendor actually had to go back many times and work with them individually to make a successful data transfer file. Review the vaccine codes before data exchange has started and intermittently once the data exchange is live. There's a great variety in the way that vendors handle CPT code, CVX code updates. Some of them just put it out there like a patch for the provider to grab, and it's up to them to upload it into their system. Some of them just consider it the provider's responsibility to monitor that and to make changes in their own system. And some of them only do it in new releases. So do not assume that their codes are correct or that they're updated on any kind of regular basis like we do in the world of IIS. We identified many coding errors. There were many discontinued vaccine codes that were being used for administered choices. Administered doses of varicella vaccine were being used in lieu of documenting history of varicella. In one EMR, even though they had the opportunity to do it, it was apparently not in a very convenient place within the EMR application, so they just decided to document that all the children had had doses of varicella vaccine instead. Vaccine descriptions in the EMR, what they actually looked at on their screen was linked to the wrong vaccine code. And vaccine lists in the EMR were not comprehensive. For instance, Tdap was added and they were still documenting TD simply because there was not a choice for Tdap. So do not assume that they are kept up to date or that they will necessarily be continued to be kept up to date. So one of the things that we are recommending is that you identify on an ongoing basis who in that organization is going to be responsible for keeping the vaccine codes up to date and how often are they going to do it. Specify vaccine codes that the IIS accepts prior to testing the files. HL7 files can sometimes contain both CPT and CVX codes, so you need to know what they're going to send and how they're going to use it. And then, of course, we know that all vaccines do not have both a CPT and a CVX code, so you may not be able to receive all data in the electronic file. If you can set a hierarchy in your system, if you accept both, to say that in this case, when there's one or the other, that we will just accept the valid code, that would be the best of all worlds, but not all systems are capable of doing that. HL7 files, even though we talk about real-time HL7, not all vendors have the ability to send them as automatic uploads. So be sure to establish that with the vendor at the time. The preferable time is at the time that they're developing it, so if there's going to be cost involved in that, that it's included in the initial cost. And manual uploads, again, are subject to failure or interruption, primarily based on who owns that process and if they leave the provider. Fields for all vaccine data, IIS, may not be available. We'd like to think that EMRs have fields for the expiration dates, manufacturer, the VFC status, and particular opt-out is very rare to find within an EMR application. They simply have not thought through all of our needs in public health, and so do not assume that those things are present. Clinicians may not fully populate all the available vaccination fields. They can be very inconsistent based on the clinician that's doing the data entry, whether they are motivated to do it completely. They can bypass these fields. It's not like an IIS. So unless they're terribly motivated to completely document all their information, they can get past it. Lot numbers are populated, I'd say most of the time, but manufacturer name and expiration dates are rarely populated. They don't necessarily have pull-down lists like we have in IIS systems. Many of them are still free text fields, so they're very at high risk for errors. We are increasingly deciding that even though we've always talked to vendors ahead of time about their data fields and what's possible and what can we get, I think there's great value in actually having a demonstration and having that demonstration from that provider's application so that you have a very good sense of how they personally are using that application, how well they're populating it, and what their data flow is in their office. So I think that is something that we are routinely going to put into practice. And sometimes I think there is great benefit still from the IIS staff to visit those providers that are looking at EMR data exchange, just so that they truly appreciate all of the data that we're asking them for and why we want it. You know, you can ask them kindly to populate these fields because we really need it, but if they're understanding that we're going to online vaccine ordering and why all this information is really important, I think you always have a better result. Opt-out or opt-in provisions in an EMR are not typically there. There are still states that require consent. And so that's usually custom interface work to make sure that there's a provision for them to do that. And what we ended up in these projects for opt-out, we found that really there was no provision to do it. It was going to be very complicated to try to do it. And these particular vendor exports had already been paid for by the providers before we entered into the project. Was that because it does so rarely happen, we decided that it could be managed manually so that if a patient said, I want to opt out, that provider was simply going to notify ACES and they were going to opt them out on the ACES side. Do not assume that EMRs have guardian information per se. Some of them have next of kin. Some of them have guarantor information, which is who's responsible for the bill. In many cases, that's the same. But as an IIS, I think you have to make a decision whether you want to accept those fields, realizing that you may not get the actual guardian. So it's important to ask those questions. So in terms of predictors of data exchange success, I would say the availability of technical and programmatic staff with a high level of expertise in their own EMR and knowing the capabilities of their EMR is critical. EMR data immunization data fields from a choice list versus free text are always preferable. A full understanding, do they fully understand the state IIS, and do they have a commitment to data exchange at the staff and provider level? Are they really committed to working with it and to have it be a win-win for both sides? Existing EMR data exchange in place with the IIS application, well, if you've done it before and you've already worked out all of these kinks, the ones that come behind them with that vendor are probably going to go a whole lot better. And the EMR product commitment to data exchange. So, like I talked about before, those vendors that are already seeking us out and saying, before I put this out on the shelf, I want to know that it's going to work with your application, are likely to go much better from the outset. So, in conclusion, I would say that EMRs are introduced into offices, environments in various ways. Sometimes they're done incrementally. So don't assume that if a provider calls you and says, hey, I got an EMR, I want to get started with this, you might find out that they're going to do demographic data entry only for 6 months. And then they're going to add in lab and x-ray integration, and then they're going to talk about maybe migrating their paper charts over. So don't assume that because they've purchased it that they're ready to go for your data exchange. Make no assumptions about how the EMR is used, how they're maintaining their vaccine codes, and what data you're actually going to get from them. Review, again, of the provider's application, I think, is extremely valuable to really actually look at it. And no two interface projects are ever the same. So treat them all as individual, test them end to end, and make sure you know what you're getting before you get there. That's my conclusion. Thank you.
No, another great presentation. And I think there's some great points there. I think it's, to me, one of the things that was really interesting was what responsibility do we have in terms of knowing how well the application is working, what it's supposed to do. It's almost a buyer beware as it gets out into the general market. And seeing and reading that article about Walmart's distributing software brings a concern and both some good news in the fact that EMRs are broadly being distributed and we could benefit from it, but the concern as to the quality of the applications out there and how much will it be certified, and then how much are we going to have a responsibility to make sure it does what it's supposed to. But now we do have enough time to open up for questions. If anyone out there would like to come up, please state your name, where you're from, and just ask your question.
A comment and a question for Janet. This is Cecile Kim from Indian Health Service. So for those of you who don't know, we represent an EMR that has developed the capabilities of the bidirectional interface. I guess my comment is related to the consent issue and whether or not EMRs have thought about state needs. I'm not sure. I know when we first started thinking about the consent issue, for us it really wasn't concern as to what the state was tracking and what we should put in our EMR. So I'm not sure about how fair that statement is, but I do think it does speak to the importance of interoperability. And to that end, what I would like to say to the group that ERA has formed an ad hoc consent group to talk about this issue, so that if there are consent issues with transmitting the information and interface, because I believe that's where the issue really lies. I think with direct data entry, talking about consent isn't that hard because folks can just enter it on a record-by-record basis. But how to interface consent, whether your registries opt out or opt in, is sort of an unexplored territory. So I'd like to invite anybody who really does have some questions about that. You know, if the FCC wants to get involved, that would be great to have your input on that committee. And my question has to do with the provision of the HL7 bridge to the sites who didn't have a transport layer for the project. Was that just project specific, or does the Arizona Registry do that for any group that wants to interface?
The HL7 bridge is a product that STC sells, and if the state purchases the product, they can use it in any application that they need to use it in. So it's
great. So any group that wants to send a message across and wants to do so automatically has the ability to obtain the bridge. And technical support for the bridge from ACES as well?
It's part of their maintenance contract with STC.
That's great. I know that we also have the bridge product, and it requires a bit of technical support on our end for our site. So I think that's a real plus for it to be able to provide that to the registry. Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, and if I might, I might ask a question. I see two people out there. Something for consideration for maybe CDC or for ERA. One thing that came up as we went through this, I saw a vendor, and I'm seeing a possible role beyond the certification for these third-party systems. Each of us projects are dealing with vendors ourselves on a similar product. And there may be a centralized role for a vendor liaison that could facilitate a discussion nationally with a point person for that application, where we as different projects may have problems and not getting solutions through our independent regional area. It might be helpful to coordinate the effort that I just found out Arizona is dealing with the same vendor I have, may have the same problem, but I'm not getting any answers. Maybe if we centralize this and facilitate a discussion with the vendor centrally from all the users of the different states as opposed to independently, that might be something that we could all benefit from and standardize, as with the CPT updates. Wouldn't it be great if we could notify one point person that all the products that were being distributed by them, as opposed independently of the certification that CCHIP may do? I think there may be a role, so I would ask maybe ERA, Sherry, you're here, and Gary, CDC, something we might have further discussions about if there's an appropriate role to facilitate something for us to help us, as opposed to 50 different projects having 50 different conversations with the same vendor and same application. See, I got you to stand up, Sherry.
I think a similar suggestion came out of maybe the workshop or something, that the idea or concept was that ERA's website could have a place in it that where people could list the EMRs they're working with, and maybe that could be expanded to include the kind of information you're talking about, especially issues that you've encountered, because I know I think it was you, Mike, that mentioned the typhoid, was it typhoid T day?
Yes.
Because we found the same thing, and we're scratching our heads going, asking the provider, do you give typhoid? We don't see any TDs in there, but we see a lot of typhoids, and so.
And that's what it is.
That kind of troubleshooting right. would be helpful universally.
Well, I've seen in several projects a vendor that I won't name, but I know it's involved with three different projects that, in talking to them, they're giving this limitation of only 100 records being sent in a batch file, which is an artificial limit, which is really severely limiting large providers in sending data. But we individually are getting no satisfaction from this discussion. I see the vendor listed in Arizona now, mm-hmm. so they're reaching out, and actually they're the ones that are involved with Walmart. So I'm very concerned about this limitation being distributed and really impacting us. But if we together as a unity and as a group can go to them and to have this discussion, it may be very helpful.
Yeah. So yeah, I think the ERA website as a community to bring this together is helpful. I think obviously we're still going to have to deal individually with providers customized
yes.
to each system, and we won't be able to solve those all together. But
in that sense, we're helping the vendor, and that's where I was saying before, we can have this mediator role with their software with the vendor to help them, and we look better like good guys in helping their product be of a better quality and information to us. So as opposed to them telling us we have bad stuff, we're helping them and things like that.
Good idea.
So sorry, Bill, I just don't even want you to. Oh, okay, Bill, one more question.
We have time.
You know, another idea along the same lines that would be even more proactive would be to put out guidance to the EHR vendors on what it takes to have a good immunization module in this system. IISs have learned so much about how to, the little utility for entering your new vaccine lot numbers, or can just be a quick list, to go back to your example, and other things. Again, CPCHED at some point will get beyond certifying just for interoperability specifications and begin to move more and more into functional specifications. And they are really looking for that kind of expert guidance. And increasingly at ONC and HITSPE and CPCHED are saying, where's public health in all of this? And I think the IIS community can really step forward and put all these sort of requirements and specifications in a nice, vendor neutral kind of guidance document that would be really readily embraced.
And I have a similar concern about forecasting. We don't know what they're doing with their forecasting. We only can and we have to depend on the provider to say to the vendor, well, this is wrong. But we know how many people use our applications that just depend on the forecast and give their shots based on the forecast. If the EMR vendor's forecast is wrong, they're doing the same thing. And who monitors that? We don't know who they have behind them in terms of, are there public health people working on their forecasting? We don't know that. So I have similar concerns.
Well, if there's no more questions, I'd like to thank again our speakers.